Match Fit, an exploration of mental health in football, is a new book by Johnny Larry, taking a look at an in-depth look at mental health in football from the Premier League down to five-a-side. It's a topic that needs to be addressed. Delighted to say that Johnny joins us from the UK. Good morning to you, Johnny.
Morning. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure is indeed all mine. We've heard reports over the past couple of years now about the effect that football can have on mental health. We've got of course, there's been a lot about contact sports as well. What was the starting point for you to write Match Fit?
Yeah, so it's actually based off my own experiences, really. I struggled with my mental health as a teenager, but I didn't really know it at the time. If you'd said you're struggling with your mental health, I'd have just looked at you confused. I hadn't heard the term mental health at all. Just thought it was quite normal for someone that age to be feeling down a lot of the time. So eventually ended up at university, and university is a very different environment. And I started to learn a bit about mental health. And I thought I wouldn't have read a book about mental health when I was 15, 16, 17, 18. But I read loads about football, and I've always been obsessed with football. So I thought, if I can write a book that combines the two topics, football and mental health, then it can help people learn about their own mental health as well, as well as just being something I think people will find interesting in its own right.
You're talking about sort of mental health issues that you personally went through, this is presumably you were suffering from depression. That was the main one, yeah?
Yeah, depression and anxiety are what I went on to be diagnosed with. So two things in my teenage years that meant I spent a lot of the time in my own house, didn't really go out, didn't socialise as much as I would have liked to. And I look back now and think, God, what a waste of what for a lot of people is the best time of your life. But at the time, I just thought it was kind of normal. Didn't realise there was anything wrong until probably age 19, 20.
So when you say that football, was football perhaps a way out? Were you participating in the football, or were you actually, was it just, you know, being the armchair pundit, as it were?
Yeah, so football was always my weekly escape. So I've been a Sutton United season ticket holder. I think I'm in my 14th year now. So I used to always know, however bad the week was going, that at least at the end of the week, I'd be able to go and watch Sutton play. And then on Sunday, I'd be able to play football. So that got me through, and that allowed me to survive. I think
I'm just thinking, because one of the big things with a lot of the mental illnesses is the fact that, you know, any sort of illness of that type will try and get you isolated, and so that you go deeper and deeper into your mind. And the mere fact that you've got Sutton to look forward to, and you could say my life may be awful, but at least there's Sutton. And the second one is the fact that you are, at least on Sunday, you're getting out and interacting with other people, whereas a lot of mental health issues will drag you, you know, back into the house or back into your room and then do even more damage.
Absolutely. It was always that get out the weekend. And some of my closest friends, even now, are people that I met at football 14, 15 years ago. So I've always had that community and a feeling that people have got my back as well. Like if I want to speak to someone about my own mental health, if I feel like I need a bit of a leg up, a bit of support, then Sutton will be the place that I go for it. And it's that idea of hope as well. Like, however bad the week is, there's always something at the end, always something to get you through. So it's been fantastic for me watching Sutton.
How difficult was it for you? Because football is, I know we just had the Women's World Cup, and I know things have changed because, you know, I grew up in the 70s when it was real knuckle-dragging stuff in the 80s with the terraces. So it was a very macho environment, you know, I'm seeing to you in Spain. And there's just been a few bits, I don't know if you caught it, there may have been a few bits and pieces in the news about macho culture in Spain relating to women's football recently. So how difficult was it for you to say, you know, I think I've got a problem here, or I'm not feeling up to it? You know, this is presumably before or just on the cusp of it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah, and it took me, it was only fairly recently that I really started opening up at all. I think with the people I know through Sutton, certainly, like, there's the stereotype that football is a macho environment, and news stories like the one in Spain you refer to certainly don't help. But it is changing, and I think it opened up my eyes, because once I did open up about my own mental health, I had plenty of support from the people I know, from within the club as well. I used to work there, so players and management, as well as just supporters. really got behind me, and it opened up my eyes. Actually, you know, it's things are changing. Football's not the macho culture it was in the 70s, 80s, 90s. We are starting to make progress, and it is a great, it can be a great social support for you. And once you've opened up, it doesn't feel as threatening to speak about your own mental health as well.
And also in the book, you look at the mental health and the stresses and strains put on professional footballers. And a lot of us may go, oh, for goodness sake, professional footballers don't have any stresses and strains. You know, they've all got Bentleys by the time they're 21. They're fated. They retire as millionaires if they're not being, you know, if they're not shuffling off to Saudi for a ridiculous amount of money. But so much has changed in the past 20 years with the rise of the internet and with the rise of social media. And I suppose it's a way that we look at the people that we go and watch to get away from our troubles. And if you're a professional sportsman and you are performing in front of thousands stroke millions on a regular basis, people kind of think they know you, and people, you know, who you've never met, and people think they can come out on your skills and your life and your lifestyle because they have an ingrained right to.
Yeah, I mean, we often see professional footballers as robots, don't we? As you know, we pay our money, we turn up, and they perform for us. And talking about their mental health, it's not to say that they don't have a good life. I mean, I'd love to be a professional footballer if I was any good, don't get me wrong. But it doesn't mean that it's all rosy, it's all fantastic 100% of the time. Now, everyone's going to face downtimes. Everyone's going to face troubles, and there are unique pressures to being a professional footballer. Like if I do something wrong at work, my line manager might have a word with me. If I make a mistake, and I'm a goalkeeper for Manchester United, I've got 80,000 people screaming down the back of my neck. I go online and there's millions of people abusing me on social media, and that is going to be tough for anyone. I mean, we can sit here and say, oh, it wouldn't be a problem for me. But it's easy to say until you've been there. So I think certainly to have the consideration of the mental health challenges that professional footballers can be facing is important, while still acknowledging that, you know, it is a good life, sure, but you're always going to have challenges. Anyone's going to have challenges. And I think it's important to keep that in mind.
And this is the thing, isn't it? Because previously, if you did muck up, if you're a goalkeeper and one slips under your body and goes to the back of the net, everybody screams at you for the match. But then you used to be able to pretty much put it away. But now, of course, with the advent of social media and everything, and Instagrams and Facebooks and whatever, and Twitters, just the outpouring of vitriol and bile. I mean, it's not only just footballers. I mean, football commentators. There was the female football commentator a while back who said it was so bad that she sat in the car and cried because of the abuse. And then she got abused for sitting in the car and crying.
Yeah, it's why so many professional footballers now are handing over their social media to professional companies that run it for them. I spoke to one of them for the book. And a lot of them will then get abused for that. I think Gary Neville spoke out a couple of years ago and said, oh, I think players should be more authentic on social media. Well, it's not, I don't think it's that easy. It's the trade-off. If you're sat reading social media as a professional footballer, it's going to tear you apart, I think. Yeah. You're going to be hanging off every mistake, every comment, doubting yourself. You hand it over to a professional team and people think you're not authentic. So it's not easy, these things for players at the top level, and it is quite a new thing, like you say, social media abuse. So I think we're still kind of coming to terms with how we should deal with it, what's the correct way to deal with it, and it's just another challenge that professional footballers face in this day and age.
And also the other thing is, I mean, let's just a quick look at how weird the world of a professional footballer is. There was a movie that came out, was it last year, following a young footballer. It wasn't a documentary. It was a movie. But that thing, I think that the guy starts off as a young Swedish player, and then you basically get, you know, because if you play Sunday football, you're playing with your mates. You know everybody. But if you're a promising 16-year-old from Sweden or from, you know, South America, the next thing you know, you're in Spain and you're playing for a team in the What's It leagues, and you're the new boy and you don't know anybody, and the mix is very different because you're all surrounded by people from all over the world now because of football. And then the people that you meet, it's a high pressure intensity. You've got to be in the first team. Injury always worries you. And then, you know, you're a young man with a lot of money. So clubbing and girls and whatever other distractions and attractions can really muck you up. And you know, in the film, the player has pretty much of a huge breakdown. And again, we seem to think that footballers leave this charmed life. But, you know, for the majority of them, it's a very alien environment, and they are sort of picked from a very early age.
Yeah, and a recurring theme from a lot of the professionals I spoke to is that although football is a team sport by definition, it never feels like it within the dressing room. So you're always competing with your own teammates for a contract. You might be one of five centre-backs at a club. Only two are going to play at the weekend. So if you're in the three that aren't and you're regularly not playing, you're not on the pitch, you're kind of aware that your mates, the people that you're meant to be socialising with, talking to, are going to be putting you out of a job. It's very competitive, and so therefore it's easy to get alienated. I mean, Vincent Perricard, one of my interviewees, he played for Juventus, played against Arsenal in the Champions League. There was a documentary about him called The Boy Who Will Be Worth Billions when he was 17, 18 years old. Huge pressure. I mean, he finished his career at Havant and Waterlooville at the age of 29, so it never worked out for him. And he said being a professional footballer at that Juventus level when he was at Stoke City as well, it's like being a rock star in that you go out, you're in front of 20,000 adulating fans, you go back in, and then you don't have a close relationship with anyone. You're seen as a product. You don't really speak to your teammates because you're competing with them. You can't talk to your family or friends about it because they see you as just, you know, the footballer, someone who's rich and famous and has got it all. So I think it can be a very lonely lifestyle at times.
And then there's the career arc, isn't it? Because in most companies, you start off and the career arc goes upwards like that, in terms of, you know, by the time you hit your 40s, 50s, you should be kind of top of your game, if you like. But with football, it's the other way around, because, you know, by the time you're 25, you should be, if you are at the top of your game, you're a fully fledged international, you're winning competitions. And then the descent begins, and then it's a question of how do you manage? You talk about the adulation, you know, you're a rock star, but what happens when the fans go away? How do you then, at 30 years old, or 35, if you're playing for Havant and Waterlooville, how do you, and you've been at the San Siro, or wherever, how do you mentally adapt to getting back to normality? Can you get back to normality? Because you've now got, you're facing 50 years of having been an ex-footballer.
Absolutely. And there's practical concerns as well. I mean, when we think professional footballer, a lot of the time we think someone who's playing for Man United or Chelsea. But the vast majority don't earn huge amounts of money. I mean, players in probably the Championship down to League Two, a few thousand pounds a week, which is good money. Yeah. But when you've got to retire at 35 and you've not got any qualifications, you've been in the academy system since you were nine, so you've not, you've never had another job, you don't have any A levels, you don't have a degree, it can be very hard to adjust. For a lot of footballers, the fear as well of retirement. When you get towards your late 20s and early 30s, you're aware in the back of your head, every contract you get, 1 year contract, might be your last. If you get a serious injury, that could be it. So a lot of players have that to deal with as well. And it can be a big burden, I think, if you're not a Harry Kane or a Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, injury. I mean, in a split second, your whole career can be over. Simple as that. Because you can have a leg breaking injury or whatever. And then at the age of 19, and you know, it's all over. And then what do you do? And again, how do you mentally prepare for that?
And the time out injured as well, it's often a time of intense fear for players. They're often isolated because the injured players will be doing their own thing. They won't be training with the main team. They'll be doing their recovery in the gym. They maybe only speak to the physio for 9 months if it's a serious injury. And all the time at the back of your head, you're thinking, am I going to come back as good as I was? And I spoke to an academic, Dr. Misha Jervis, and she was saying she'd done a study where, remember the figure off the top of my head, but the massive overwhelming majority of players had a fear of re-injury when they came back to playing, but weren't being supported through that. Now, you think it's in the club's best interests, never mind the well-being of this player, that should be a consideration anyway, but even if it isn't, it's surely in the best interests of the clubs to want to help their players play as well as they can. And if they've got a fear of re-injury, you're not going to be playing at your best. So I find it bizarre that clubs aren't doing more to support players through injury.
How willing were people to talk to you? Because again, I know that we are in the 21st century, But, you know, there's still that image. I mean, there is still that if you like, it's a taboo almost to talk about how they feel and mental. Because if you say, listen, I'm having difficulty, an opponent may prey on you for that. It's always been that. If you look at somebody like Graham Lasseau, for example, who read The Guardian and was widely pilloried by some people because he seemed to be an intellectual, you know, because he wasn't reading, you know, one of the tabloids. So how difficult is it for a footballer to say, you know, listen, I have had problems, because it must affect a lot of people. And presumably before then, we've had footballers getting involved in, you know, drink and drugs, etc., to get over it.
No, it's a good point. And to be honest, the majority of the people that I spoke to were already retired in terms of professional footballers. There weren't many current players who were happy to speak to me, the exception being in the women's game, where it was a lot easier. So perhaps there is still this macho culture that it will always exist to an extent. And I do think it's getting better. But I think you're right. I think there's a fear that players will be seen as weak if they talk about their mental health still. And that did affect the interviews that I was able to get.
So, Johnny, the women's game, yeah, because the way that that's come on in the past 5 years, and the way that the whole, if you look at the supporting, if you look at the crowd for a women's game and the crowd for a men's game and the atmosphere and just the general feeling, This is. Do you think we're at a really interesting period now in football, because it may be saying it doesn't have to be the way it's always been?
Yeah, I think it's a great option for people. I mean, I know someone at Sutton who goes to the men's team on his own or with mates. He'll bring his kids to go and watch the women's team. I think that's great. People have the option. Like you say, the atmosphere at the men's and women's team is very different at Sutton. The men's team, the games will often be packed. It's quite aggressive.
Tribal is the word I always use with football.
Yeah, but I find it cathartic. And I think tribalism gets a lot of bad press. There are obviously bad sides to it, but it can help people feel together like a band of brothers. But yeah, the women's side is different. It's a family atmosphere. It gives everyone a route into the game. If you're worried about going into a hostile atmosphere, you can go and watch the women's game. I think it's great that we have this the option, and then the chance to go and watch both. And I hope the two can support each other as well. I don't think that the men's and women's game should be in competition at all. I think the fact that the Sutton men's team doing better helps the women's team get better crowds as well is absolutely fantastic. And hopefully that relationship works both ways as well.
And at the end of the day, it's a shared experience. I mean, we've talked about, you know, the mental health issues for professional footballers, but there is something about, we, you know, like it or lump it, and we all try and be individuals, but we are social animals, and there's nothing better. People always say, whatever team you follow, there will be fantastic lows and there'll be amazing highs. And as a shared experience, that perhaps is the best tonic for anybody suffering from mental health, because at the end of the day, it's like you're interacting with your fellow human beings.
Yeah, you're part of something. I think that's massive. If you're, like you say, if you're struggling with depression, anxiety, it's very easy to become isolated. Just by going to watch Sutton, and you don't need to have any sort of specific skill sets to go and watch your local team. Like, I spoke to someone who said, you know, if you want to join a dance group, you've got to be able to dance. If you want to join a band, you've got to be able to play a musical instrument. If you want to go and watch a football team, you can do it. You know, there's no problem. And I've spent hours sitting in the pub and talking about, oh, do you remember that game against so and so in 2011, or the cup run we had in 2016-17? And it does. Yeah, it always gives you something to connect with people, to feel, yeah, a part of something greater than yourself. And that's, I think, the best thing for me about being a football fan.
So, Johnny, new season, that great sort of first match of the season, feeling, you know, the possibilities are endless. How are Sutton doing, by the way?
We actually won our first game 5-1, so yeah, not too far off the truth. we lost our next four league games after that, so we are towards the bottom. But we had a great cup win last night away to Wickham, who are in the league above us. So hopefully that will kickstart our season and we can push on. I mean, we're the underdog story in football. We really are. Like, we have absolutely no right to be in League Two. We won the National League as the only semi-pro team in the whole division. We're playing against professional sides and won it. So it's a great time to be a Sutton fan, I have to say.
The book is called Match Fit, An Exploration of Mental Health and Football. It's by Johnny Lowry, who's been here today. Johnny, if people want to find you online, did you do the social media thing? A bit strange to say after we've been talking about mental health and social media, but obviously, where can people find you online?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter or X or whatever it's called now, at Added6, so Added S-I-X. I have got Instagram, Johnny S-U-F-C, and I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn as well.
Then the book will be available as a virtual download, by the way, from our virtual bookstore. The book is called Match Fit, An Exploration of Mental Health in Football. It's by Johnny Lowry. Johnny, thank you so much for your time today.
Cheers. Thank you very much.